listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin has a primary election coming up Tuesday, August 9th. It's a big election year with Democratic Governor Tony Evers running for a second term. There's a field of potential Republican challengers, and multiple Democrats are running to challenge incumbent Republican Senator Ron Johnson. While primaries, even midterms, tend to have much lower voter turnout than presidential elections, this week's leaked Supreme Court draft opinion that would, if it holds up, overturn Roe v. Wade has gotten a lot of attention focused on voting. Could that bring more people to the polls this year? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What has your attention when it comes to this August primary? Are you paying attention yet? Are you interested in choosing a candidate, a Democrat to run against Ron Johnson, a Republican to run against Tony Evers? What do those candidates have to do to make you pick them as the one? Or do you not care? You'll vote for whoever is on the ballot, even if it's a Muppet, if it gives you a chance of unseating an incumbent you don't like. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Julia Azari is Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. Julia, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start with this draft opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court, potentially overturning Roe v. Wade later this summer. How do you see that shaking up elections, if at all, this year?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think there's a couple of ways that this could go. The first one, which you've undoubtedly heard a lot about, is the possibility that this kind of galvanizes Democrats who have typically been less motivated by judicial issues and court issues than Republicans. And I think that's something that has gotten a lot of attention because, of course, the upcoming midterms don't look like great conditions for the Democrats. It's never really a great situation for the president's party, and we're in a situation in which the Democrats are receiving low marks on their performance on important issues like the economy, and Biden isn't very popular. So I think that a lot of politics watchers who are kind of either on the Democratic side or looking at the broader picture of the Democrats are going to be looking at kind of, does this have mobilization potential to energize Democratic voters who may otherwise be a little bit disenchanted with the way things are going right now in politics?
You said there are a couple of ways of looking at it. So one way is, yes, it could inspire Democratic voters, or?
Yeah, the other way is maybe doesn't have totally different implications, but I think is really an important kind of conversation about the politics of this that I want to invite the listeners into, which is this question of kind of polarization around the issue of abortion. I think it's very clear that there's a big partisan gap on this, just like there's a big partisan gap on basically every single thing right now. But when you look at various types of polling, it becomes clear that really within both parties, there's kind of a range of opinion. And there's been a debate raging about this in among political scientists for well over a decade about whether Americans are truly polarized on this issue at the kind of mass level of people in the electorate, or if most people fall somewhere in the middle. And 10 years ago, I would have told you that a Supreme Court decision of this magnitude on this issue would have the potential to divide either party. It's anybody's guess. Now, I feel like that has changed a little bit, and we've had a number of kind of, you know, high-profile anti-abortion Democrats no longer in politics, like Michigan's Bart Stupak. Whereas I feel like one possibility is that with Republicans, given the nature of this decision and what people think the fallout will be, if it becomes a situation in which abortion is completely illegal in a number of states and some of the other kinds of big implications we're seeing, that might actually have the possibility of dividing Republicans, people who are mostly, you know, perhaps say mostly I don't support this, but maybe I see some room for exception. This is the way the issue is currently structured, with those really strong restrictions that are likely to come out of some states. I think that has the potential to be a wedge in that within that coalition, and not so much press at the divisions among Democrats, even though certainly those divisions exist.
I want to spend a little more time on that Pew poll you pointed out toward us. I think it's easy, especially from a vantage point in the media, to think that there's a very strong pro-choice group out there. They would describe themselves as a very strong, self-described pro-life group. One's totally against abortion. One's totally for choice. That poll shows a lot of middle ground and variation and uncertainty in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's essentially what, you know, some political scientists have been kind of advocating for, that perspective in terms of how to understand the polarization around this issue. The other interesting thing about some of the Pew data that's come out over the last couple of months is that Republicans have been very steady on this issue in terms of the percentage who think abortion should be legal in most or some cases. I think it's all or some cases. Whereas Democrats have, this is again kind of voters in the mass electorate, have become more pro-choice over time. I thought that, I don't know how that really will play out in November or you know, in the time in between them, but it is, I think it's kind of interesting as we're thinking about how the parties have kind of coalesced around this issue. I certainly would have told you in the past couple of years, this is a really key issue for devoted Republican activists, and that being able to convey support for the anti-abortion and pro-life position for Donald Trump was really key in consolidating a Republican party that was initially kind of unsure about him in 2016. But at the same time, that is different from the kind of policy change that I think we're kind of looking at potentially, if that draft opinion is at all representative of what the court will eventually decide.
We're talking to Julia Azari, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University, looking at Wisconsin's election year, big statewide races for governor and U.S. Senate. We've been talking so far about the potential impact of this potential ruling on Roe v. Wade from the U.S. Supreme Court. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does that likely decision affect how you vote? Do you think it will affect the election overall? Call 800-642-1234. Julia, glancing at the primaries for a moment, we've got Republicans lining up to run against Governor Evers. We've got Democrats lining to run up against Senator Johnson. We heard from the latest Marquette University Law School poll from Charles Franklin that the leader, both those races, is don't know. What would it take for candidates to distinguish themselves, you think, and stand out, whether it's on an issue like abortion or otherwise?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I mean, I think it's instructive to think about the fact that a couple of other Midwestern states just had their primaries this week, Indiana and Ohio. And it did, I mean, they have winners, but it also in some ways kind of looked like the winner was still don't know in terms of the decisiveness of some of the big contests. I'm thinking of the sort of three major candidates competing for the Senate nomination in Ohio. I think that this is a tricky time for primaries because the parties are, in terms of their kind of broad stances, there's so little variation. And you do have these issues, you know, as we were just talking about with abortion, where there's a lot of room for these like really complicated and nuanced positions. And a primary election doesn't strike me as really a great venue to hammer out those nuanced details. So candidates have to think about other ways to distinguish themselves and other things to emphasize. And it wouldn't surprise me very much if on the right, on the Republican side, this sort of leads candidates to double down on other types of issues on which they want to distinguish themselves. There already has been some contestation in that Republican gubernatorial primary about the 2020 election and about the kind of lack of the perceived idea that Rebecca Clayfish has a lack of support for Donald Trump's position on the 2020 election that he actually won and won in the state of Wisconsin, a claim for which there is not any evidence, and some Republicans in the state have kind of moved on from that. But that's also a point of weakness for Republicans who've taken that position, and Clayfish is not an exception. On the Democratic side, it seems to me like the interesting thing about that race is it's tightening. And it does seem to be, there does seem to be a possibility that will come down to being kind of like the same dynamics as the 2020 Democratic presidential primary, which is to say all about electability. And that's, I think, going to have a lot to do with name recognition and with the types of claims that these candidates might make about either their potential to win statewide or their records winning statewide, which Godlewski and Barnes both have.
We're talking about the August primary and general elections later this year with Julia Azari, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. Big statewide races for governor and U.S. Senate. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you paying attention to these primary races? What do you want for your party, if you affiliate yourself with the party? What do you want from your candidate for governor or Senate? Are you pulling for the incumbent in either of those races? What issues do you want candidates talking about? What issues do you want us in the media to be talking about over the next few months? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk about election year in Wisconsin with Julia Azari, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you watching the races for governor or Senate, the primaries especially, or are you holding off? What issues are important to you? Are there endorsements from current or former presidents of the United States, say, that you're watching for? Call 800-642-1234. And what do you think about this potential overturning of Roe v. Wade and how it could affect the vote, your vote? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's bring on a caller. Isaac is with us in Milwaukee. Isaac, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Isaac?
I just called in because I am planning to turn in a blank ballot for the governor's race in Wisconsin this year.
And why is that?
I think that we have historically low voter turnout rates, and they've only been getting lower, you know, each election with some exceptions, but that's the long-term trend. And I think that that's the case maybe because a lot of the people who don't vote, in a way, are, you know, I hate to say it, but smarter than a lot of us who've been trying to give the Democrats our vote over and over again, you know. And I just say that because I think that we've got two major parties who, you know, are very unpopular, but have still managed anyway to continue running the system. And they're both fighting in very different ways culturally, but they're both fighting for the, you know, the elite and the ultra wealthy and the business class. And I just think that we need a party for workers and the poor and, you know, the bottom half of this country who are working every day and, you know, ultimately making less money.
Isaac, thanks for the call. Julia, there are a lot of people who don't vote, especially in non-presidential elections. Do you think some of them may share Isaac's motivation?
Sure. There's a lot of discussion about why people don't vote. I mean, one interesting thing is that over nationally, over the last couple of election cycles, even though I think a lot of people share Isaac's sentiment that they feel really shut out of the political process, they feel like things haven't gotten better for them. Turnout has actually gotten higher. I think because even though that perception and that widespread sense of dissatisfaction is there, that relative to 20 years ago, the kind of issue differences between the two parties have still been really evident. I guess it depends on what issues and what policy outcomes you care the most about. But turnout has actually gotten higher. That's kind of like a silver lining of party polarization. But I do, you know, I do really hear that dissatisfaction and that sense that no matter who is in office, life has not improved for some people. And you know, I've done some work with one of my graduate students on what people write in kind of open questions on surveys about why they don't trust or have confidence in institutions. And we see a lot of the kinds of comments that Isaac was making about, particularly about political parties. They see this as primarily for the elites, for people with money, and not for them. And I don't have any easy answers or even any difficult ones.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about election year in Wisconsin with Julia Azari, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. You can join in with your thoughts about the race for governor, the race for Senate, your hopes, your fears in those races, and whether the Roe v. Wade makes you pay more attention to them. This leaked draft document from the U.S. Supreme Court that indicates maybe overturning Roe v. Wade. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Julia, as you mentioned, a couple of primary votes have come in now. A lot of people looking at the influence of former President Donald Trump. We have a very small sample size here. What are you looking at when it comes to whether his enthusiastic endorsement makes a difference?
I'm looking at a couple things, and some of them are going to be easier to really get a handle on than others. The one that I think is easier to get a handle on is kind of what kinds of candidates are being endorsed by the former president, and is he endorsing candidates who otherwise, you know, aren't very likely to win? And, it, you know, in the last couple of cycles, Trump has been very strategic about endorsing candidates who are likely to win, which I think really makes, you know, like makes a kind of self-reinforcing cycle where he looks really powerful in the party. When people perceive you to be powerful in the party, you are. So I'm looking for those sorts of endorsements. That did make the Vance endorsement very interesting, the Senate race in Ohio, because it didn't look like J.D. Vance was necessarily going to be a very strong candidate up until fairly close to the election when he was endorsed by the former president. The more complicated issue I'm kind of looking at is the difference between an actual Trump endorsement and a kind of dividing line between candidates who align themselves with Trump and kind of Trumpism, the kind of Trump positions and political style, and the, you know, kind of candidates who are running as an alternative vision within the Republican Party, of which there are, you know, there are a few, including the candidate, the third place finisher in the Ohio Senate primary. So I'm kind of looking at those dynamics, both what is the kind of strength of the alternative position in the Republican Party, but also what is the relative strength of Trump as the person versus Trump as the idea. And that includes looking at candidates who are really trying to take Trumpism to kind of the next level and potentially be competitors to the former president who want to take that vision and kind of run with it. And, you know, like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, I think, is a good example of that. So I'm kind of looking at whether we also have prominent candidates like that who are, I call them interpreters of Trumpism. That might be kind of a clunky phrase, but you all will forgive me.
In a state like Wisconsin now, where, again, don't know, is leading the Republican field for governor, is that a case where you see a Trump endorsement making enough of a marginal difference to help somebody emerge from the pack?
I mean, that one seems unclear. I mean, a somewhat different read. I was looking at the Marquette poll. I was looking at the Real Clear Politics average, and it looks like Clayfish is a pretty strong favorite at this point. Maybe that could obviously change. And these polls didn't even include Michaels. But I do think that if there were, you know, if it becomes close, if it starts to look like the Democratic Senate primary where it starts to tighten, then that's where you might see an endorsement. You might see an endorsement make a difference.
Now, turning to other possible issues, we've talked a little bit about the 2020 election still being in there. Abortion, of course, a big one. You mentioned the economy earlier, and we're going to talk about the economy and all the yes, but on the other hand, things, great job numbers, bad inflation numbers, and you can go back and forth for a while. How do you watch for that asserting itself in these races?
I think the main thing that we've learned over the years is that, you know, the economy tends to be people's number one issue. So the question then is, how do people perceive the economy? And how does that interact with their partisan identification? So like you said, there's this very confusing situation where there's, you know, good jobs numbers, bad overall economic ratings because of perceptions of inflation. I also think there's probably something going on with COVID. People are just kind of grumpy and dissatisfied. I mean, I think everyone has had a rough time the last 2 years. And it's, I think that we don't quite know what a midterm election looks like under those conditions, right? We don't really have a roadmap for that. We also learned in 2020 that the role of the economy seems to be tempered by bipartisanship. And what I mean by that is that if you just looked at the economic numbers and you ran them through the model that political scientists have been using to predict elections, which has been pretty good, Trump massively overperformed. He did much better than you would expect given the state of the economy and in fall 2020. And so, you know, one question there is, are there people who identify as Democrats who might go, grumble, grumble, I am not happy with the economy, I'm not even super happy with Biden, but, you know, fundamentally, this is my identification, my team, my perspective, and vote that way nonetheless. I did see a primary poll, a midterm poll that was sort of reflective of that. Democrats were doing really badly on a bunch of different issues. Republicans were doing badly on some as well. And then it was like, well, who are you thinking to vote for? And it was like 44, 43 Republicans to Democrats, right? Like people have all these ideas about how things are going. And ultimately it comes down to their partisanship.
So briefly, issues may not matter as much anymore.
That's one possibility where, because of the pandemic, because of the level of polarization, because of the unique circumstances of the 2020 election, I think we're a little bit in uncharted territory as far as what we might be able to say about the larger dynamics of this 2020 or 2022 midterm.
Julia, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Julia Azari, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. We talked with her about this year's election in Wisconsin, how current events, including this week's leaked Supreme Court opinion, potentially overturning Roe v. Wade, could shake things up.